The following podcast is brought to you by a site called Fred.com. Enjoy. I'm Ken Plume, and you're listening to A Bit of a Chat with me, Ken Plume.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Hey, it's Ken Plume from the Ken and Dean Snidecast.
What's that again? I've never heard of that. And chances are, anyone
Snyder,
who's listening hasn't either.
The Dee Snider Funcast.
Now you're just digging the knife in.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you? You're deep in the writing process.
I am. I can truthfully say that. For the first time in months.
Does it get easier?
What's that?
Does it get easier? I mean, do you find...
Oh, Christ, no. No. No, it got harder, and now it's getting easier.
When was it easiest?
When was it easiest? I would say at the beginning of season two.
Even beyond season one? Because you had... You know, a notebook full of ideas going into season one? Or did those evaporate once you were past the pilot?
Well, no, I mean, the notebook fed stuff, but I didn't have too many, fully realized plots. I had a lot of characters I wanted to hit. I had a lot of backstory. I had some ideas for launch points for episodes, but, they're still fake story synopses that I use to pitch the show that we've never done and won't ever do because they're retarded.
There's got to be one you keep coming back to, like, can I make this work?
Oddly enough, I'm kind of in the middle of writing one of those now.
Oh, so that notebook,
I mean,
it's
vastly different and could not have happened if it hadn't been fed by a couple of seasons of other events and other characters and stuff like that, but a sort of science fiction trope that I wanted to hit since season one and borrowed from for a couple of episodes in season one, like, you know, what would have been the main character got used in a different context in a different episode.
Well, in the first season, what did that character become?
Character became Mike Suriyama in the past tense episode. I was going to do something completely different with him, and I think actually his name was going to be Professor Impossible. So things change over time. you borrow where you can.
But now
I've kind of revisited that first germ of a story, and it's through a season five lens, and it resurrects a different character that we haven't used in a while.
When was the last time you actually looked at the season one episodes?
Oh God, I can't do it. I recently watched a season two episode, and that was painful enough.
What was the most painful thing? I mean, because obviously, I mean, you, I know, are a perfectionist when it comes to the animation as well. So it's not just story that'll get you.
Right. The story was pretty good. The pacing was off. Season two was definitely better than season one on all fronts, I think.
Well, Some would argue
about the jokes or the plots or whatever. But like animation wise and just directorially, let's say, season two was better, and it looks like crap to me now. But so the timing was a little slower, you know. I wish I could have gone back and sped, you know.
But there's something to be said
about the line readings up.
There's something to be said about the first season episodes. I mean, sometimes you just want to sit back and relax for a few minutes and ingest what's just happened.
Of course. Yeah, like after a joke, you want a couple of minutes to go, yep, that was a funny.
Yeah,
with your friends.
It's a kickback.
Wait for somebody on screen to move.
Am I wrong in remembering, because it's been a while since I've seen them as well, that they were not as score heavy either. There seems to be a lot of just oral air in those episodes. Were you?
I don't
really...
know. I like I said, it's been a really long time since I watched a season one episode, so I can't speak to that. I remember it used to be trickier to work. I guess the score usually accompanied action and stuff like that. Maybe there was a little less ambient stuff, but like every time we had an action scene where we had score, you know, J.G. Thirlwell would just go to town and rock out on it, but we would have, you know, jet planes zooming around, and those were like really hard to mix, and we've kind of found an equilibrium since then. We go, oh, stay away from, you know, these frequencies when you're, you know, doing a scene, scoring a scene like this, and, you know, I have a better feel for like where we're going to want music to be foregrounded and sound effects to be in the background and vice versa.
Well, I mean, is there a certain aspect that you didn't think was that important during the first season that you learned was
Before you get into that, I should say that Jim's palette gets more diverse every year. You know, like we now have a lot of different music for a lot of different moods, and he loves trying new stuff out. And, you know, I always bring my influences to him, and we listen to, you know, movie soundtracks together and stuff like that, and go, oh, that's hot. We got to do something like they did in Logan's Run, you know. But
there's just a lot more play now.
Yeah.
Well, I was saying, was there something that you know, going into the first season and in production the first season that you didn't treat as important as you found out that you should have in latter seasons?
Absolutely.
Some element in production or in writing or.
Absolutely. Again, the timing. We were, I don't even know why we were doing this, but we were editing the animatics in Flash. Which, I don't know why we're doing that. But
is that a legacy? Because at one point the show was supposed to be done in Flash, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was probably a legacy from, the pilot was done in Flash, and that same studio did pre-production for season one, but we were now shipping it to Korea. But I guess maybe it was a legacy from that, and, you know, that was what they knew best. And so that's what we were working in. I didn't know what I was doing. I had never worked on a computer for anything other than word processing and a little bit of Photoshop before that. So I didn't know what could be done or how things are normally done, and I was just trusting everybody's judgment. But that's part of why we couldn't finesse the timing quite as intensely, you know. And it's hard to edit audio in Flash, or at least it was at the time. Like, you'd have to take the track out of Flash, do an edit, bring it back in, you know,
and adjust accordingly.
Now we're just like trimming breaths out, and we're grabbing other takes and throwing them in, or we're speeding something up if we have to. You know, there's a lot more elasticity to it, and it's a much faster process. So I think season one, I just would leave things the way they were a little more, because I didn't realize that with better tools and a little more experience, you could adjust them. You could fine tune those also, you know. Like I still marvel at this once in a while. The first Orpheus episode, Hank has a terrible voice because I had a cold when we recorded it, and it's the one where he's like scuba and everything, and I sound like I'm talking through a snotty nose the whole time, and we would never do that now. Like, we would just record me a week later when I was better, and
but that was a character choice.
I don't know why we couldn't do that, you know.
Well, I'm sure you were under the gun. I mean, that was later in the season.
No, that was pretty early. That was like the fourth episode.
Was that the fourth?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then you had no excuse whatsoever.
We had no excuse other than, like, not knowing that.
Where the hell was your quality control?
You can book another hour at the studio, and you can go get those tracks recorded and bring them in and replace them.
So the thing is, you would never. So when you, in a few more years, you know, when everyone's having their 20th anniversary retrospective of Venture Brothers, you'll go back, yeah, and you'll do the special editions.
Right, exactly. And I'll add dance scenes and Jawa pratfalls.
You'll recut them. You'll make sure that, you know, you go in, you'll do your vocals all over again, but by then your voice will be shot, so it'll be even worse.
Yeah.
Scuba! Scuba!
I've also noticed how much my Hank voice has changed. Well, I think of him. I think of him as a constant, and I think that I'm doing it the same way, but it's different. I think I started trying to imitate a Johnny Quest thing a lot more. Like not just personality wise, just the vocal quality of it. Like it was a little deeper and a little raspier, you know, because I was trying to get Johnny Quest in there, and now he's a lot rubberier.
Well, I mean, I would assume it's because you found a comfort level with the voice as opposed to imposing something on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it became, I don't know, in a way it became more unique.
And you also, I mean, obviously, you've allowed the character to age up to match your smoking habit.
I submit that I actually do the voice a little higher than I used to.
You think?
Yeah.
Only because you were trying for something lower?
There's a lot more takes where Doc goes, it sounds too low, you sound like Smoking Hank.
You sound like first season Hank.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, but which one would you say is the most natural voice for you to do? The one that comes easiest and you can do longest?
Hank's probably up there. Just Hank's pretty natural.
That's closest to your natural speaking voice?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of times when I just accidentally talk like him. You know, my girlfriend is constantly going, you sounded like Hank. Particularly if I get upset about something. If I'm outraged by something.
So you're out, your natural outrage.
Oh, why do they got to do that? You know, and she's like, you sound like Hank.
Does that immediately
deflate like, you know,
your argument?
The last impression you want to make if you're trying to sound emphatic and outraged to somebody.
Yeah, that's got
to
undercut whatever point you were trying to make. Is that her weapon to use against you when she wants to? It's like, you sound like Hank, and it just, boom, pops the bubble.
It'd be worse if she said you sound like Dean.
Yeah, I don't think you want to sound like Dean in an argument. There's absolutely no defense. At least you can say Hank is passionate.
Yeah.
Dean's just whiny.
Well, Dean's got passions yet to be unleashed. They're just quieter, more sensitive passions.
But there's a whiny petulance to Dean that isn't there. Hank is more strident and confident.
Yeah.
In his wrongheaded beliefs.
Well, he's older by a couple minutes.
And boy, does he lord it
over.
And he's
got a more athletic build.
Well, that's because of his...
And he's the lady killer.
Because Brock was his father, right? You saw that. You told everyone that, right?
Yeah. We just keep waiting to put it in an episode, right? Yeah. No, it's not that he's Brock's his father. It's that he's a clone of Brock because he has blonde hair also.
It all makes sense.
And he likes Brock. So that's their evidence.
Because clones are naturally have an affinity towards their progenitor.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, likes, like? Is that it?
Because nobody's ever taken after a stepfather or anything like that. Nobody's ever liked or wanted to be like their stepfather. That's actually probably true. But
clearly never happened. Outside of 24, which I know you hate doing.
I don't hate doing it. It's hard to maintain. It's not even that it hurts. It's like you have to tighten your throat so much that my throat becomes paralyzed after a while, and I can only squeeze out this kind of Kermit-y, meek little sound.
So is 24 a session ender?
he probably should have. No, because you can't really do that when you're tired. If your throat's already tired, then you're not going to be able to keep it tight as long. So it was like a session middle. It was like, let me do Hank because I can do him fast and I'll get warmed up and then I'll do 24.
And then we'll take a break.
Yeah.
We'll send Doc.
And then I'll come back and I'll scream and sweat as Sergeant Hatred or the Monarch.
I've got to think that outside of 20, Sergeant Hatred's got to be a difficult one to maintain for any length of time.
No. Not at all, because we talk like him all the time to each other. The two voices Doc and I use most in conversation with each other at the Astro Base are our version of Dr. Venture and Sergeant Hatred, and we both do them.
See, most of the time,
so everything's either nice, way to go, or just hey, here's something.
And every time I've seen you with Astrobase, it's just been awkward silence as you two glare at each other. I sent you something. Oh yeah, okay, fine. Where is it? Why don't you go look?
It's in the Dropbox. Look at the Dropbox.
You see it? No, not that thing. Hold on, I sent the wrong thing.
No, just give me that. Yeah.
It's an hour.
You put that kind of pressure on a room.
That's when I sit down on the couch that can hardly be found.
Oh, even less so now. Now we have like 20 boxes of layout drawings from Korea filling every space. Some of them are stacked in the shapes of furniture.
You should. That's what, you know what? Why don't you make them
into
furniture?
We should make a giant throne like Concrete Head.
Yeah. Make it practical. If you got those boxes, you need more seating in that place because you know it's packed with visitors.
Yeah, we could stack them in a giant throne and we could play Concrete and we could play that rotten little girl character that What's-Her-Face used to play all the time. Wouldn't that have been better if I remembered her damn name?
We'll fill it in later. We'll go back. We'll do an edit.
Lily Tomlin.
She's
not busy being yelled at by the iHeart Huckabee's guy.
Yeah, what was it? Something Ann.
Yeah, no, that I didn't remember. I could have at least remembered Lily Tomlin a little faster.
Hold on. I know it's something Ann, not Carol Ann, because that's Poltergeist. Hold on, I can't go. Edith Ann. Aren't you happy now that we've cleared that up?
Adorable.
That would have gnawed on you all day. So I expect that. I expect next time I go to the Astrobase, I want to see box furniture. Get creative. I want to see a divan.
But it'll be a throne worthy of Mr. Ken Bloom.
Yes, I'm hoping for that, because it's really awkward to try and...
With little steps so we can shine your shoes while you sit in it.
I hope that. Will Doc be the one? I gotta shine your shoes?
You'll get your fucking shine box.
Because we know that there's bus tours that come through the Astrobase all the time. Mm-hmm. It's packed with visitors. I've never not been there when there hasn't been 20 people queuing up to get in. I mean, it is the place to visit.
We used to participate in, because the building is all other, like, art studios and stuff like that. It's getting less so now. Like, now there's, like, actual, like, businesses in there. But it was all art studios when we moved in, and they have, like, an open studio every year. And we used to throw the doors open and let people wander around, but we weren't cultishly, marginally famous yet.
Ah. So now you don't do it.
So it was just like, oh, so you guys make cartoons. And then they'd look at Doc's paintings and then they'd leave.
Oh, and the giant penis you have hanging up.
Yeah. Giant haloed cock.
It's like, okay, well, we're going back to our t-shirt company. Nice visiting you all. Can you ask Doc to not shower in the bathroom anymore out of the sink? It's rather awkward. That,
Or pour your urine jars in there.
Where else are they going to go?
Yeah, no, working in the Astrobase is like being on a road tour with a band.
Have they ever frozen before? Because that thing is not exactly secured to the elements. There must have been a time we walked in, the jars were just frozen.
No, it never gets that cold in there.
Would that be the last straw when you have a shattered urine jar sitting there?
God, can you imagine a liter Coke bottle shaped urine icy? That'd be horrible.
Slowly melting on the floor. Would you wait? Would you clean it up, or would you wait for him and make him clean it up?
It would really depend on whose pee it was.
Have you done it too?
The bathroom is
like literally 15 feet from you guys.
Right, but sometimes you're super busy, it's late at night, and you're alone, or like you go down in the bathroom and it's locked and somebody's taking a giant dump and you really just got to pee really bad.
I didn't know you could lock that. It's got stalls. Why would anyone lock it?
Because they don't want anybody to hear them poop. You know, it's ridiculous. It also occasionally locks by itself, like just the act of the door closing somehow jostles the lock and it locks by itself. So sometimes you go and it's locked and you're like, ugh. And you come back like 5 minutes and you're like, who the hell is in there? And then you have to get a dime out and undo the lock.
How many times have you done that?
Of course.
It's a common occurrence, isn't it?
It is. Surprisingly common.
Well, I'm glad it never happened. Why don't you guys just remove the lock? What's the point of it having a lock?
So people can have their privacy, their precious, precious.
Have you ever gone in and locked it?
I don't know. No, probably not.
Yeah, then remove the lock. What are they going to do? They'll show up and they'll see that there's no lock there. Take the mechanism out. Take a stand for your comfort. No more jars, I say.
I rarely ever poop there, so it's not really an issue.
I never noticed the jars.
If anything, I get yelled at for not locking it.
Where
like,
are
like,
the...
Like, everybody's, like, you know, standard thing to do is to lock it, even though there's two stalls, and you can lock those stalls individually. And I don't lock it, and I pee. And sometimes people walk in, and they're like, oh, dude, lock the door.
I don't remember ever seeing the jars. Where are they?
They're not a constant.
I don't know.
The jars will be there.
I don't
there
know if it's like his version of sun
Doc's
tea.
Been there for 2 days. Doc's been there for 2 days working on something. Maybe he's making a record, whatever it is. Sometimes you'll come in and there'll be a jar there.
Or
back when he was painting more.
Granted, I would have thought, if I had seen them, my instant assumption would not have been pee jars. I would have thought, oh, it's like a wash for his brushes.
And you're welcome to think that.
I will continue to do
so. And I think, on the record, that's what we should say it is, and you should delete the last 5 minutes of nonsense.
No, Doc's mentioned them.
Of course he has.
It's out there. Doc's not ashamed
of
any of that.
No.
A natural function. He'll go on for an hour and a half talking about how it's a natural function and an expression of him as a human.
Absolutely.
And an artist.
Well, no, if he was a real artist, there'd be a crucifix hanging in it, but, you know.
No.
And he would have gotten the government to foot the bill.
I believe he's put one of the monarch heads from the Lego dolls in there.
Or a copyright-free Chinatown Hulk doll.
Yeah, the Astro Base, it's gonna be horrible when that, if it ever goes away. if it's ever dismantled or decommissioned, would you have a ceremony for the decommissioning of the Astro Base?
I guess it would depend on the circumstances. If we were evacuating New York City, no. If we were simply moving, to a better Astro Base, yeah, I'm sure we'd stop at the door and. I don't know, have a last episode of Cheers moment or something.
As you emptied the last jar.
And then we'd look at the fourth wall.
Oh, I hope so. Wave goodbye to the audience. The cheering throng that's out there waiting for you. Accompany you down the freight elevator. Well, what's a better Astro Base for you? Can you envision a better Astro Base?
Even our Astro Base square footage arranged in a less long rectangle shape would be good for me.
It is like setting up in a hallway.
Yeah. Or if our long rectangle was sideways so that we had three windows instead of two. It is like an extra long shoebox the way it is right now. And I would love to be near a window, and I would love to not feel the narrow walls around me. I say this from the safety of my 6x9 mini office in my home, which is even skinnier.
But it's by a window.
But it's by a window, and there's no pee.
I would hope in your own apartment you don't have pee jars.
I've got no cock paintings either.
And the doors don't lock.
So I don't have it. The dirtiest thing I have is Sean Connery in his onesie on the Zardoz poster.
Is there anything from the base that you would not bring home that clearly is just a base item that has to stay there?
That I would not bring home or bring to a new base?
Bring home. That you. It's clearly this is not something I could ever live within my house, but it's great for the base.
Oh, every piece of shitty furniture that we've found in the garbage. Yeah. I mean, the base is mostly furnished by garbage.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Secondhand stuff
down.
We've found.
I thought
on
you
the
had bought that couch new. You know, when the Astor base was fresh and newly painted.
That one we did. And last year I bought like a steel table to be my desk, but but it replaced one that we had found in the garbage, which was like a horrible computer desk. My drawing table is a piece of wood that we laid on top of two like saw horses.
Where'd you get the wheelchair?
Doc's desk he found in the garbage. I'm sure he found the wheelchair in the garbage. I don't know. I think he's had that for a really long time. He may have had that since like college. I don't know.
But it's clearly the most comfortable chair in the base.
Oh no, it's terrible. I hate that thing. I hate that damn thing. Every time we clean up, that's like the one unaccounted for item, and it's just like it's an inconvenient shape. It moves when you don't want it to. It's. I'm like, all right.
When was the last big clean in the Astor base? The older fans might remember the first post-venture big clean when they got free stuff.
The last big clean was probably... It was probably this past fall. It was actually really clean. It was really neat in there, and Doc was really proud of himself. He did it all by himself. It took him days, and then he found us another table. He found like a table and chairs, like so we had like a little conference table and stuff like that. Everything was open and clean and nice. And then I brought 20 boxes of layout drawings there when World Leaders shut down.
Which is going to be fine when you build the furniture out of them.
Well, then where are the table and chairs going to go? It's the only place that... we just get a... Cell.
Why can't you put the boxes on the floor and make a raised platform for the table and chairs?
I'm telling you, this is a lot of boxes.
Or a stage space, like a performance platform. Doc can have concerts in there for you.
Pardon me while I whip myself up an iced coffee. That's the sound you are now hearing is my ice cubes.
Oh, I'm letting the radio theater of the mind play for them. Ooh, a nice creak there.
Yeah, that's the refrigerator door there. Never quite settled right once we renovated the apartment.
Now that you're in Brooklyn, you make your iced coffees instead of buying them?
Depends on my mood. I've always made my iced coffees, but when I want something fancier, that's when I go down the street. There's a lovely iced coffee joint right up the street for me.
What's the name?
The Tea Lounge.
Sounds so twee.
Yeah, what, big places, bunch of old couches.
Do you sit down and enjoy your cup of iced coffee in the Tea Lounge?
No, I never sit in that joint. Usually there's no seats. Like, usually it's
full of people with no jobs?
No jobs, or my neighborhood has a lot of young parents in it, actually. There's a lot of, like, stay-at-home young moms with their babies that they're bringing there. And then, yes, a lot of jobless people or writers.
Jobless people.
Yeah.
But you don't do that. You don't strike me as the type who sets up shop at a coffee shop and writes.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
Were you ever that person when you were out in L.A.? Did you ever do that? Did you ever... You ever put an office in a Starbucks?
No. When I was in LA, we worked in a writer's office all the time, and in my little apartment.
So never appealed. Is there something about that?
No,
that
it's
appealed to you?
The reasons I wouldn't do it were one, you can't smoke, and
well, when you were on staff,
yeah.
When you were writing out in L.A., the draconian laws hadn't been instituted yet. You still could have smoked then, right?
Well, you couldn't smoke in the office, but we would. There was like a little balcony, really the landing of a staircase, right outside my office. We would all go out there and talk and smoke.
Is that where most of the meetings got done? A lot of the work on the script?
Yeah, that's the one where like me and Ben would sort of get things figured out. you know, or we'd work at home. But yeah.
Well, that's, so
the smoking puts the kibosh on writing in a coffee shop, or you're that guy who's constantly asking somebody to watch your computer.
Yeah, you don't want to be that guy.
And then, everything's it's distracting. I would, maybe I would try it when and if I successfully quit smoking for more than 3 months, which I just completed one of those, then maybe I can try to go to a coffee shop, because writing is terribly lonely and you get a little crazy, especially in a skinny little room.
Well, I mean,
a little change of scenery, a little, ambient sounds of the clicking glasses and stuff like that. Maybe that would be nice.
Would you write outside? Would you write in a park?
I don't think I could.
Or would you?
I don't know. You really need just like tunnel vision when you're writing a script. So.
So you're a no distraction kind of person when you're writing. So no TV, no radio.
Definitely no TV. Sometimes music. Depending on where I'm at with the script and what kind of mood I'm in.
When you're breaking
and,
a script?
And actually where the speakers are. Like, it actually, if I had a stereo in my office that was, like, say, on the shelf across the room and I was playing that, that would be less distracting than when I'm playing music on my iTunes on the computer I'm actually writing at. Somehow the speakers being closer to me and pointed right at me makes it more of a distraction.
Well, what point is it verboten? I mean, is it something like music is fine when you're breaking a story or when you're revising a story?
I don't know. I just know that sometimes it bothers me and sometimes it doesn't. probably when I'm breaking a story, it's harder than when I'm just writing. Like if you got something outlined and you know what you're doing and you're just into it, you either won't hear the music or it'll help, you know? And so sometimes it's helped a little. Like sometimes, I mean, definitely I've written scenes with music in mind. And other times I've just like listened to movie soundtracks or something that is not, you know.
So you go for orchestral
pop,
stuff.
Poppy or backbeaty or whatever.
Or a song you particularly like and will focus because you like the song.
Right. Sometimes those can help. Like they can set a mood for something.
So what was a song that you remember writing a scene to that you know that was never going to be in the show, but it was a song that motivated a scene?
Actually, one of them we got in the season finale this year, the Pulp song "Like a Friend." I actually wrote that scene with that song in mind, and we got it. And likewise, the "Everybody's Free" montage at the beginning of. Was it season two?
Now, did you have an idea of what story-wise you wanted to do and then tried to figure out the song, or they came to you at the same time? I need this, and this is a song I'm going to use. Was there a search for the song?
Actually, I think there was. I think in the case of the Everybody's Free one, like, I was probably inspired by a different song. Like, I probably heard, like, I think a Fisher Spooner song inspired me to do this scene where they're like at a rave at the beginning, and the way you have that like kind of you have that like strobe light effect, and there's that like quiet build that like then sort of explodes in a big bass thump or whatever. I remember thinking, oh, that would be so cool to start an episode like this, and so that inspired it. But then when it came to like really writing it, like I think we pick the song after conceiving the scene, but before writing it.
So, but you had an idea of what you were looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you try and get the Fisher Spooner song, or just was never going to be a good
one? No, it wasn't. It wasn't as appropriate. Like many ideas in writing in general, like a lot of times you start with an idea and it either changes or the thing that you build around that idea overcomes it, and you have to throw that idea out. So,
is there any idea that
no longer the appropriate song? It actually didn't have enough zazz.
Was there any idea like that you keep coming back to and you have to keep throwing out? like a scene you really want to build. You want to have this scene, but it never seems to fit with the story you have to tell at that time.
Yes. I couldn't tell you what that was right now, but I know.
But there is one.
If given a little time to think, I'm so like focused on the specific story that I'm writing right now. But yes, definitely, like, you know, I'll go a whole season where I'm trying to shoehorn this one thing into like every single script. I go, oh, good, I get to do this gag again. And then, nope, doesn't fit again.
Can you name the one season?
And again, the story that I'm writing now, I've tried to tackle a couple of times. And and last season's, was it Bright Lights, Dean City? elements of that were floating around for a long time and things that I wanted to do.
People might know as the Spider-Man episode.
Right. The copyright-free Brown Widow Spider-Man-esque parody character.
Yes, also the episode. Big guest star episode.
Yes, the last-minute guest star episode.
Now, did you do the scratch track on that?
I did the scratch track on that. I didn't want to. I didn't. We had some people in mind that we wanted to get for it, and it kind of never happened. And then, like, production was, you know, at the point where it's like, oh, this voice needs to be final this week because we're sending it to Korea. And so I went back and redid the voice a little cleaner and a little better than I did the first time, but I wasn't happy with it, and it bummed me out all through production. So it wasn't until we were editing picture when I came back from Korea months later that I said, let's just get Nathan Fillion to do this. Thankfully, the character, you know, wore a mask, and so you could, you know, it was a little easier to match flap, as they say in the industry.
Right. Well, last season was positively star-studded.
Was it? Yeah. I guess, yeah, if you count both halves, sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I count that as the full season. I don't count the half seasons.
Right, and thank you for doing that, because I like to think of it that way, too.
What are you not happy when people don't think of it otherwise? I mean, it is the arc of that season is that entire run.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's good to know that they're collected on the on the Blu-ray side as a complete whole.
Yeah, yeah. They do make nice chapters, though, I think. You know, like the first eight do kind of come back around because it's, you know, that eighth one is when Brock comes back into the show for real.
Do you feel comfortable with the hour-long season finale?
Oh my God, yeah. I'm extremely happy with that.
I mean, it's a huge step this production.
I had fun doing it, and it is, you know, like 70% of the reason why we're doing seasons 5 and 6.
Knowing what went on at the time with that and what you threw out and what was done. I know that, you know, you certainly were at a confidence level with what you would learn in previous seasons that I'm sure that the idea of tackling an hour episode in season 2 would have just been something that you went, no, we can't do that. I won't do that.
I don't think so.
You think you would have done an hour?
I beg to differ. It wouldn't have been as good as the hour we finally did do. But, you
had a lot of breathing room.
But seasons 2 and 3 both had, you know, 2-part finales. And I don't think we've ever written a script that we didn't have to cut 5 minutes out of. You know, like there's always more you could have done. There's always another subplot that you wish you could have put in a story. There's always, cinematic pacing.
Do you think
that you wish you could get on an establishing shot even, you know?
Do you think that you had built the world to the point where an hour would have been justified in the second season?
Sure. And I mean, I think we're pretty good at this. And I think, you know, I think if an hour was our job, we would make a good hour.
Or maybe feature length.
Someday.
So what's going on with the new season? One thing you should probably let people know that they're not going to see a new season this year.
Right.
But they will.
If we're lucky, they'll see it by this time next year.
So you've become the Sopranos of animation. Or the Mad Men.
I think we have been for quite some time.
but largely previous to this, I mean, at the beginning, it was circumstances out of your control that led to a lot of the delay
right.
in getting new seasons going and so forth. But now,
yeah,
rightly so. I mean, the people probably do not realize how much you and Doc sweat and put effort into these scripts to make them as good as possible.
Right.
Even at times when you don't particularly feel like writing.
Like all of season four for me, yeah. Which I did okay. I think Doc did better than I did last year, but I think I did okay in the end.
Doc seemed to cruise along last year. I don't remember anything. Doc just seemed like he was in a
state. Doc really just rose to the occasion. I think
every call we got to do this script.
Well, I think two things happened. I think one, we got a tongue lashing from our producers for taking too long, and I think the good side of Doc's ego went, no way am I going to give that guy an excuse to yell at me that nobody.
It's Doc's time to shine.
And, you know, nobody will tell me I'm not doing my job well. And, you know, Doc does a better job than anybody at a million jobs. So I think there was that. And then I think he also just knew that I personally was hurting, you know. Like, I was really exhausted and, you know, wearing the weight of all the production concerns. Because, I have to deal with that stuff a lot more than he does. Like, I have to be there every day and direct and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, people don't know.
And then I get home at like 10 o'clock at night and have to write. And I think he knew that I, you know, we hadn't gotten that break between 3 and 4. He knew I was a mess, and he just kind of stepped up and picked up the slack. You know?
Yeah, well, there were a couple of times when you had a script due that, you know, it was Doc having one already ready that saved the tongue lashing of, we need a script to move forward on production.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a pressure for you to know that, you know, you're struggling through scripts, but also because Doc doesn't deal with it because he does, you know, he's at the Astro Base or writing at home.
Right.
But you're going into the office every day. So you're getting the production staff looking at you going, when do we start?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are some days you didn't want to go in. They're also looking at me going,
oh, we thought we would have a job for the next 3 months. You're sending us home.
And then they start showing you pictures of kids. That was
kind of the most brutal part of season four, was like dealing with having to send people home when they thought they were going to have jobs and crap. That just sucked. And like, I don't carry that responsibility lightly. Which is why we're, you know, taking a little while now. Like, we needed a break. And also we just this time around won't start until we have, a backlog of scripts, because we don't want to ever be in that position again ourselves or put anybody else in it, you know?
But the fans are going to have a special next week.
Yes.
So it is next week, right? It's not this weekend, it's next weekend.
It's the 28th of August.
So August 28th, they'll have a Shallow Gravy special.
Right. And as far as I know, they will have a sneak peek on iTunes starting on the 23rd, because there's going to be an entire Shallow Gravy EP, a 5-song EP of Jacket and various interpretations of Jacket and the music video for Jacket, which is part of the special, but it'll be a standalone on iTunes, I think, on the 23rd.
And based on what I know about the EP, people should not miss that. Totally. Completely unfair.
I mean, if you love Jacket and you didn't get enough of it in the prom, now it's got a chorus and a bridge, and there's 3 minutes of it, and there is a dazzling, pretty funny video that goes along with it.
So you and Doc are seeing some money off of this, right? This isn't just going into Adult Swim's coffers and you never see anything.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, no, like, we don't, it's not like when we sold t-shirts where, like, it goes directly into our filthy pockets.
No, but what I'm saying is, I don't, you know.
We'll see money the same way we see money from DVDs. Like, at some point, percentage of our merchandising will trickle down to us in a year.
People want to see that, you know, you guys do reap some benefits from this. You know, because it's such a well-merchandised show, and there's so much out there.
It's getting better, man. There's some good crap out there.
It is getting better. In fact, I mean, people should. There's the dolls from Biff Bang Pow.
Yeah. The Hot Lunchbox Collector's Edition that just came out.
Yeah, the Rusty Venture.
Yeah.
And
then there's the Sideshow.
From Sideshow.
What would you call them? Maquettes? Would you call them?
I think they're. I think they call them. Like a premium format statue, but it's a giant maquette. It's like what, 18 inches? I think it is of
16 or 8. It's I saw pictures of them all the way through, like when they were sculpting them and everything, and I was giving, you know, editorial notes on the designs and stuff. And so I've seen pictures of them for months, and then I saw them painted, and they're gorgeous. And then I was still not expecting what they looked like, how glorious they were when I got to Comic-Con and I went over to the case. They were like twice the size that I thought they were. They're huge. They're like 16 inches or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought they were maybe 8, 10 inches tall or something. So they're really, they're awesome looking. They're so on model and everything and stuff, and they're just big and they're beautifully painted.
So that's Brock and Molotov, and I know how picky you are with Brock on model. So for you to be happy with a sculpt on that.
I know. Well, those guys pretty much nailed it out of the gate. They were pretty amazing.
There were
like minor tweaks, and most of them were like little things like, oh, he's got a little pocket on his polo shirt. Like, can you put a little line there for that? You know?
Well, so yeah, there's stuff coming out. It's not like it was. But there certainly could
and
be
there's,
more.
I don't know. There
should be like Venture Brothers t-shirts. Toothbrushes. There should be Venture Brothers nail grooming kits.
I mean, I would much prefer to be involved in all of it and to only make things that I personally think are neat. And that's how it's been so far.
Venture Brothers pocket
at some
home.
Point, I'll just go, screw this. Make whatever you want. I'll just cash a check.
Make me Snoopy.
Yeah. How much can a 40-year-old man care about Velcro wallets? Do as you will.
Come on, you wouldn't buy a Billy Quiz Boy Velcro wallet?
No, I would demand that they send me one for free. I would encourage others to buy it.
Yes, well, I'm putting that out there now. By the end of the year, there better be a licensee for Velcro wallets to come forward and offer to make that. And it's going to have that little tab that you can clip it on your shorts. Everything. Full Velcro mid-80s wallet.
And then the limited edition Special Venture Brothers Mazda Miata.
You'd drive that around, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you be the guy, hey, that's the creator of the Venture Brothers in his Venture Miata. You know you would. You'd be that guy. You'd start wearing a fancy top hat and grow a Hodgman mustache, cruising around town. Ah, Mr. Venture. Venture on your license plate.
A tricked out Renault Fuego with a Big Daddy Roth Venture customization. That's what I want.
Oh, boy, the dreams. Well, then we pretty much had a bit of a chat right now.
It was a bit of a chat.
And we'll have another one soon, right? You'll come back, right?
Of course. How'd it go with Ricky Gervais, by the way?
It went well. It was interesting. We talked about Hodgman a bit. You'll have to listen. It got a little... Yeah, it got a little of that. I'll send you the link to it. You'll probably get a kick out of it.
Please do. I like both those men, and you as well. So,
well, if you like me so much, maybe my henchmen could return at one point.
Are you SAG yet?
Maybe other places could be spooky in the Venture universe. I nailed that line.
But it's too fun to imitate you.
Why? Why do you took everyone else's role for yourself? You have to take my henchman and then claim you're doing me? because it sounds nothing like me.
Oh.
Here, we'll end on this. I'll say spooky. You go.
That one I can't do.
There.
I can do the hailing him now. I can do that one.
People don't know. I had two voices in that show.
Well, hello. Yeah.
Because I was also the voice over the comm that was when all the ships were going down.
Saying what?
Like, what was it like? Enemies everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and the guy who gets, like, cut off by battle.
Yes. And I did a third voice, which obviously was a voice too far, which was one of the henchmen when Brock and 21 were giving the pep talk before the battle.
Okay.
Some throwaway lines.
Ah.
But no.
Did the line get redone or did the line just get cut?
No, you did it.
No.
As is your wont.
I like myself, don't I?
But I'll always have spooky.
Yeah.
One day, you make me SAG. You have that power. Or I'll just do it uncredited again, and we'll talk about it 4 years later.
Get yourself SAGged up. Come back and do your blessed.
How about if I do the blessed, and I'll let you take the credit? How about that? I'll do that. I don't need credit. I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it for the love of the show and my friends. Next time I'm in New York, you write a blessed thing for me, and we'll do it, and it'll be you.
All right. Well, this one I'm writing now has an impossible number of voices in it.
I'll do whatever.
At least at the 26th page so far it does, and I'm sure I'm going to have to trim this back, cut out about a dozen backgrounds, but, you know, maybe somebody will stick around.
Well, you let me know, and I'll be there, and then you can cut it after the fact.
Yeah.
But I'll have the feeling of knowing I was in there for a little bit.
Yeah, and I'll get to have those tracks on my iTunes and get to enjoy them in the privacy of my own home.
As is your wont. Well, now let's do a fake radio goodbye to everybody. So I'll go, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
And now we're done.
Ta-da.
You've been listening to a podcast from a site called Fred.com.